Good morning to each one this morning. It's good to see you all here this morning. It's a blessing to know each of you and the friendship that you are to us as a family means a lot. It's a help for us. We're also thankful for the God that we can put our trust in that will never let us down, even in the most difficult times that we face in our lives. The title for the message this morning, I've titled it, At the Altar of Busyness. And you are listening to a preacher this morning that has needs, in case you didn't realize that. And so this was a need in my life, and I sensed I needed some help and some change. And so I ask you, this past week, did you worship at this idol, at this altar of busyness? I was reading through the book of 1 Kings, and we have recorded there for us the story of Solomon. And King Solomon is an example for us. He's someone who had a fatal downward spiral in his walk with God. And it didn't happen overnight. It was a slow process. A slow process of compromise. Our fellowship with Jesus is the spring or the source of all of our fruit. And if I'm not worshiping God every day and meeting with God, my Christian life will begin to decay and to fall apart. And so there's no substitute. There's nothing that we can substitute for our own personal worship, our own personal devotional time with the Lord. And so this morning, I think this subject plagues every one of us here. So as I talk to you and I ask some questions, I get a lot of the same answers, and a lot of it is, I ask how you are, and if we ask how work is, well, what do we say? Busy. Busy. Busy, busy. That's the day that you and I live in. We're busy. I read several chapters in a book titled Crazy Busy, written by Kevin D. Young. I'll just read an excerpt from that book. He says, it's a mercifully short book about a really big problem. I am the worst possible person to write this book, and maybe the best. My life is crazy busy. I don't say that as a boast or a brag. I'm not trying to win a contest, I'm just stating the facts, or at least describing the way my life feels almost every single day. I often made the quip, I'm supposed to write a book on busyness if only I could find the time. And I wasn't joking. How did I get this way? How did you get this way? How did we all get this way? I've yet to meet anyone in America who responds to the question, how are you, with the reply, well, for starters, I'm not very busy. I suppose there must be a six-year-old somewhere out there who doesn't have anything to do, and some dear folks at the nursing home who could use a few more interruptions. But for almost everyone in between, there is a pervasive sense of being unrelentingly filled up and stressed out. And I'll stop quoting from the book. There's a lot of good things that he points out in that book. He makes mention of a lady that came to America from, I believe, from Asia. And she came wanting to make a lot of friends, and make connections and get to know people. And as she went about doing that, and she would ask people their names and how they were, almost everybody said that they were busy. They were busy. And so in her mind, she thought, well, maybe if she would change her name to Busy, maybe she would be able to connect and people would be able to connect with her. So she changed her name to Busy. And so when people asked her, what's your name? She said, her name's Busy. She was trying to connect with the people that she was trying to get to know who were busy. And so she tried to enhance her social connection with people in that way. It's a sad day that you and I live in, isn't it? So this message is a warning for myself, and I'm giving it as a warning for you about how being too busy, and I'm not just talking about material things, I'm talking about even good and right things. Being too busy in anything, even being busy for God, overextending yourself, can lead to apostasy from the gospel. And we see that. We see a living example of this in the life of King Solomon. You can turn in your Bibles to 1 Kings chapter 11. I'm going to rely on your memory of this story as we jump around through it. And I think most of us are fairly familiar with it. We don't have time to go into it, everything in detail, but I'd just like to pick out a few things that stood out to me that can maybe help us. I'd like to read 1 Kings chapter 11, starting at verse 1. But King Solomon loved many strange women, together with the daughter of Pharaoh, woman of the Moabites, Ammonites, Edomites, Zidonians, and Hittites. Of the nations concerning which the Lord said unto the children of Israel, ye shall not go into them, neither shall they come in unto you, for surely they will turn away your heart after their gods. Solomon clave unto these in love. And he had 700 wives, princesses, and 300 concubines. And his wives turned away his heart. For it came to pass when Solomon was old that his wives turned away his heart after other gods, and his heart was not perfect with the Lord his God, as was the heart of David his father. For Solomon went after Ashtaroth, the goddess of the Zidonians, and after Milcom, the abomination of the Ammonites. And Solomon did evil in the sight of the Lord, and went not fully after the Lord, as did David his father. Then did Solomon build an high place for Chemosh, the abomination of Moab, in the hill that is before Jerusalem, and for Molech, the abomination of the children of Ammon. And likewise did he for all his strange wives, which burnt incense and sacrificed unto their gods. And the Lord was angry with Solomon, because his heart was turned from the Lord God of Israel, which had appeared unto him twice. And we'll stop reading there. And so this morning, brothers and sisters, the truth is this morning that a person doesn't go from walking red hot with God, in intimate fellowship with him, somebody that God met with twice and that God loved, you don't go from that overnight. But it was a slow process. Downward began to compromise the best thing for good things and good things for evil things. And we have him ending up like he did in this chapter. And what a very, very sad state that is. Came across a story, has a lot of satire in it. I'm not sure who wrote it, but it drives home the point and where I like to go with this message And so I will read it to you as well. It's called The Plan. Satan called a worldwide convention. In the opening address to his evil spirits, he said, "We can't keep true Christians from going to church. We can't keep them from reading their Bibles and knowing the truth. We can't even keep them from having conservative values. But we can do something else. We can keep them from forming an intimate, abiding experience with Jesus. If they gain that connection with Jesus, our power over them is broken. So let them go to church, read their Bibles, and have conservative lifestyles. But steal their time so that they do not have time to have an intimate fellowship with Christ. This is what I want you to do. Distract them from laying hold of Jesus and maintaining that vital connection throughout their day. How shall we do this?" They asked. "Keep them busy in the non-essentials of life and invent innumerable schemes to occupy their minds. Tempt them to spend and spend and borrow and borrow. Convince the young wives that they have to work and the husbands that they must work 6 days a week for 10 to 12 hours a day so they can afford their lifestyles. Keep them from spending time with their children. As their family fragments, soon their homes will offer no escape from the pressures of work. Overstimulate their minds. Entice them to play the stereo whenever they drive. Have them keep something going constantly in their homes or on the job. Make it easy for them to have access to all kinds of music, podcasts, and information. Jam their minds with this, and it will break their union with Christ. Pound their minds with news and weather 24 hours a day. Invade their time in the car with glaring billboards. Flood their email and mailboxes with filth and junk mail to make them stumble. Even on vacation, let them be excessive. Have them return home exhausted, disquieted, and unprepared for the coming week. Don't let them go into nature. Send them to amusement parks, sporting events, and shopping malls instead. And when they meet for spiritual fellowship, don't let them talk about anything deep or where they're struggling. Discourage them from enjoying his presence when they are together. Instead, make them afraid of opening up and fill their time with small talk, idle chatter, frivolous laughter, and gossip, so they will leave with troubled consciences and unsettled emotions. Let them be involved in soul winning, but crowd their lives with so many good causes that they have no time to seek strength from Jesus. Soon, they'll be working on their own strength, working in their own strength, sacrificing their family and health for the sake of the vision." It was quite a convention. At the end, the demonic spirits went eagerly to their assignments, causing Christians everywhere to get busy with life and pull them away from the one who is life. Have they been successful? And I'll let you judge. Solomon penned the words in Song of Solomon, chapter 1, verse 6. He said, "They made me the keeper of the vineyards, but my own vineyard have I not kept." The vineyards, the keeper of the vineyards, those were works organized and arranged by man. What vineyards are stealing your time? What other vineyards are stealing your time from taking care of your own vineyard? What is keeping you from your own worship, your own fellowship with your God? What are the things that you focus on that are a substitute for beholding Jesus day by day, every day? There's many things that can crowd out the keeping of our own vineyard. It can be our job. It can be a computer. It can be sports. It can be personal ambitions. It can be financial investing. It can be relationships, social media. It can be our children. It can be your grandchildren. It can be the ministry. It can be anything you want to put in there. There's so many things that can and that will want to crowd out your own worship and your own connection with Jesus. And you may think, well, this is a really good thing to do. Well, if it's taken away from your time of worship with God, then it's not a good thing for you to do. Hudson Taylor, he made a comment on Song of Solomon 1, verse 6 about Solomon not keeping his own vineyard, keeping all the other vineyards, but his own he didn't keep. And he says this, and I'm going to quote from him. Our attention is drawn to a danger which is preeminently one of this day. The intense activity of our times may lead to zeal in service to the neglect of personal communion. Such neglect will not only lessen the value of the service, but incapacitate us for the higher service. Let us never forget that what we are is more important than what we do. And all the fruit that is born when not abiding in Christ must be fruit of the flesh and not the spirit. As wounds, when healed, often leave a scar, so the sin of neglected communion may be forgiven, yet the effect remain permanent. These are sobering words, if they're true. And so, I'm going to suggest to you, I'm going to tell you that it's very, very imperative, it's very, very vital that every day you are, I am, alone with God. There's no other substitutes that will take that place. Jesus said there's one thing that is needful, and Mary has chosen that good part, which shall not be taken away from her. Worship of Jesus affects everything. Communion with Jesus each day affects everything. The one thing that Jesus is trying to prioritize in that story with Mary and Martha, the one thing, he wasn't emphasizing soul winning or crucifying our old man. All those things are affected by this thing, the thing of worship and loving and communion with Jesus through his word by the Spirit. And so that this morning I desperately need a fire lit to set as a priority in my life the worship and time alone with God. We have prospered in a temporal way, but I wonder, have I become a beggar spiritually and in things of eternity? Worshiping is the great essential of fitness. If you have not been worshiping, when you get into the work, you will not only be useless yourself, but a tremendous hindrance to others. Turn back to 1 Kings chapter 2 now, and we'll just briefly go through the life of King Solomon and point and pick out some things that will help us avoid the same process that King Solomon went through. 1 Kings chapter 2 and verse 12. Then sat Solomon upon the throne of David his father, and his kingdom was established greatly. We have King Solomon being made king right before King David died. It was David's desire that Solomon was king, even though his other brother tried to steal the kingdom from him. Was God's will that Solomon was king too. God entrusted Solomon to reign and to rule over his people as a king. And so we have his kingdom being established greatly, firmly. It was fixed. God was in this thing. And we have Solomon being king for 40 years. And most of those 40 years were wasted. If we were to break those 40 years down into periods, would break into maybe three separate distinct periods. The first one, about the first 4 years, are characterized by blessing from God. We have Solomon worshiping his God. It seems like Solomon could identify with the psalmist who said, you know, as the hart panteth after the water brook, so pant my soul after thee, O God. It seems like that was Solomon's heart at this time in this first 4 years of his kingdom. He was hungry after God. He loved God. He worshiped God. He took time for God. So we have those first approximately 4 years of his kingdom, of his life. And then he moves into 20 years of building, and I'm going to call it busyness. We have him building the temple for the Lord. He built his own house. He built Milo, which is a house for his Egyptian wife. He built barns for his horses, quarters for his soldiers, replenished cities, built the walls of Jerusalem. And he just seemed to be obsessed with building or with busyness. And so we have that 20-year period where Solomon was just greatly involved with building, and just elaborate and fancy and elite buildings for his empire. And then we have the last 16 years of his life, and it's a sad end. He went from worshiping God, loving God, God appearing unto him. He went from that. And we wonder how he could have done that. But I see this in my own heart. He went from that to being an idol worshiper and an adulterer. He had 700 wives and 300 concubines. He had multiplied his wives against the direct commands of God. He also had multiplied his gold and the silver, which was also forbidden by God as well. If you look back in Deuteronomy chapter 17, verses 14 through 20, it's a very interesting passage where God limits and doesn't want them to get the wealth and the gold and the silver. He has some limits on that, and Solomon went over and above, exorbitant. So what were the characteristics of these first 4 years of his life? The first 4 years of blessing. And the blessing resulted because he walked with his God. God entrusted him with the kingship. God entrusted him to rule over his people, and God blessed him. We have in chapter 2, verses 13 through 25, we have his brother Adonijah wanting to come and to marry one of his concubines in a way to get in and to steal the kingdom from Solomon. And Solomon had great insight. Even before God blessed him with exceptional wisdom, he already had insight, and he saw this. He saw what Adonijah was trying to do, and he said, well, that's not going to work, and he put Adonijah to death. He recognized his brother's deceitful motive. And so he was a man of discernment. We have in chapter 3, verse 1, he was a man of peace. Solomon made affinity with Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and took Pharaoh's daughter and brought her into the city of David until he had made an end of building his own house and the house of the Lord and the wall of Jerusalem round about. We have Solomon making peace with kingdoms, with nations that were previously at war with his own father. And so we have God's blessing on him, and that's probably why he penned the words in Proverbs chapter 16. Just read that verse to you quickly. Proverbs 16, verse 7, Solomon writes this, and he says, When a man's ways please the Lord, he maketh even his enemies to be at peace with him. And so we have that as another characteristic of this man who was walking after God, serving God. Nations were at peace with him because of God's work in his life. Then moving on to chapter 3, verses 5 through 15, we have him as a man of supernatural wisdom. And in verse 12, God tells him, "Behold, I have done according to thy words. Lo, I have given thee a wise and an understanding heart, so that there was none like thee before thee, neither after thee shall any arise like unto thee." Why did God give Solomon this? Why did God give Solomon so much wisdom and understanding? Why was it? Why did God favor Solomon in this way? Well, if you go back to verse 3 of chapter 3, it says, and I believe that this is the reason why God gave Solomon this request. It says, "And Solomon loved the Lord, walking in the statutes of David his father. Only he sacrificed and burnt incense in high places." We have Solomon loving the Lord. Solomon was following after the Lord. The hunger in him for God caused him to worship and to fellowship with his God. Going on to chapter 4. Another characteristic of those first 4 years of blessing, we have that God blessed him with so much. If you go to chapter 4 and verse 34, "He was blessed with much, and his fame was throughout all the earth. And there came of all people to hear the wisdom of Solomon, from all kings of the earth which had heard of his wisdom." Here was the entire world. They saw the God that this Solomon worshipped and loved. The witness had gone forth. Everybody knew about Solomon and his God, and his fame was spread abroad. God was working through this man in an amazing way. And the last blessing that I see that characterized those first 4 years of his kingdom is in chapter 4 and verse 32. Says, "And he spoke 3,000 proverbs, and his songs were 1,005. We have his ability to compose and to write. How inspired he must have been to pen and to write 3,000 proverbs and to write 1,005 songs. He must have been on fire about God. He must have loved the Lord. That's what it was that drove him to do that. And to speak and to write about his great God. Well, let's move on to the next 20 years of his life as he gets busy. He gets busy and he gets busy building and he builds and he builds. And it seems that he gets too busy for God. If you turn to chapter 6, and verse 37. "In the fourth year was the foundation of the house of the Lord, in the month of Ziph, and in the 11th year, in the month of Bul, which is the 8th month, was the house finished throughout all the parts thereof, according to all the fashion of it. So was he 7 years in building it." Going on to chapter 7. "But Solomon was building his own house 13 years. And he finished all his house." So we have him working 7 years to build the temple of God. And then how long does he work to build his own house? It was almost double the time. 13 years he spent building his own house. And it cost him. And it cost him a lot. In a lot of different ways. We have Solomon in this cycle of busyness. And he was busy. He was busy. I'd like to turn to chapter 9. I would like to point out three things. Three things that I should expect and that you should expect when you get too busy for God. And these things come to us very clearly from this chapter. 1 Kings chapter 9 and starting reading at verse 10. And it came to pass at the end of 20 years, when Solomon had built two houses, the house of the Lord and the king's house. Now Hiram, the king of Tyre, had furnished Solomon with cedar trees and fir trees and with gold, according to all his desire. That then King Solomon gave Hiram 20 cities in the land of Galilee. And Hiram came out from Tyre to see the cities which Solomon had given him, and they pleased him not. And he said, "What cities are these that thou hast given me, my brother?" And he called them the land of Cabul unto this day. The first thing that will happen, that you can expect to happen when you become too busy for God, is this, that your commitment to others will grow cold and meaningless. In the Bible, our realness, who we really are when it comes to God, and our relationship and our walk with God, is oftentimes reflected in our relationship with our brothers and sisters. And you might be thinking, well, Solomon gave away 20 cities. What are you talking about? Well, what kind of cities were they? What kind of caliber of cities were these? King Hiram was not pleased with them, and he called them the land of Cabul. And you look up that word, and it means a rubbish heap. It means worthless. Solomon gave to King Hiram something that cost him little or nothing. And that is a sign in our own lives. When our commitment to others, when my commitment to others, to my brother and sister, if I even do anything for them, it's not going to cost me anything, or not, at least not much. And so I'm suggesting to us this morning that my commitment to my brother and to my sister is a reflection of my relationship and my worship of God. The second one I see is found in verses 15 through 19 of the same chapter. And this is the reason of the levy which King Solomon raised for to build the house of the Lord, and his own house, and Milo, and the wall of Jerusalem, and Hazor, and Megiddo, and Gezer. For Pharaoh, king of Egypt, had gone up and taken Gezer and burnt it with fire and slain the Canaanites that dwelt in the city and given it for a present unto his daughter, Solomon's wife. And Solomon built Gezer and Beth-horon, the nether, and Baalahath and Tadmor in the wilderness in the land, and all the cities of store that Solomon had, and cities for his chariots and cities for his horsemen, and that which Solomon desired to build in Jerusalem and in Lebanon and in all the land of his dominion. Another sign, another evidence of myself becoming too busy for God is that when we become too busy for God, we become more and more occupied with things. With material things. We have in verse 15, we have him building his own house. We have him building his houses for his wives. In verse 19, we have him building cities of store. We have cities for his chariot, cities for his men. He was obsessed with things. And I see that in my own life. You know, you start accumulating things, and things slowly become more important to me. My stuff becomes more important than God or other people. In 1 John 2:15, John tells us to love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. If any man loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. And so I asked myself this morning, where is my heart? Am I too busy for God? How important are the things that I have in my life? And we sing this song, it's just a couple lines, but it says, turn your eyes upon Jesus, look full in his wonderful face. And what's going to happen when we do that? A spiritual transformation will happen. The things of this life will grow strangely dim in the light of his glory and grace. The last thing I see as a sign of our own, if we get too busy for God, is Solomon's personal devotional life diminishes. Keep your hand here at chapter 9, but flip back to chapter 3 again. I'd like to read verses 3 and 4 of chapter 3. And Solomon loved the Lord, walking in the statutes of David his father, only he sacrificed and burnt incense in high places, and the king went to Gibeon to sacrifice there, for that was the great high place, 1,000 burnt offerings to Solomon offer upon that altar. Solomon had been king for about a year up to this point, and here he was offering 1,000 burnt sacrifices in that year. That is incredible. The time that took, but Solomon wasn't a bother to Solomon. He did that no problem. 1,000 burnt sacrifices in that first year. Calculate that out. Go back to chapter 9 and see what happens. Chapter 9, verses 24 and 25. He's now too busy to worship his God. But Pharaoh's daughter came up out of the city of David unto her house, which Solomon had built for her. Then he did build Milo, and three times in a year did Solomon offer burnt offerings and peace offerings upon the altar which he built unto the Lord, and he burnt incense upon the altar that was before the Lord. So he finished the house. How many times did Solomon worship that year with burnt offerings? Did it get more? No, it drastically decreased. Three times. Three times in a year. Why? What would have been his excuse? He was too busy. He was too busy. Being too busy for God will lead to spiritual, moral weakness. And you can ask me how I know that, because I know that for a fact in my own life. We cannot sacrifice. We cannot become. We can. But if we want to be a Christian for the Lord, we must not sacrifice our time of worship with Jesus. So as we wrap up wrap this up, we have the last 16 years of Solomon's life, and it's marked by what? By barrenness and sin and wickedness. I didn't write the verses down, but we have God going from his favor upon King Solomon to God was angry with King Solomon and all that he did, and he pleased not God at all. That was the last 16 years of his life. And long before he compromised with the commandments of the Lord, long before he did that, he was compromising in his communion with his Lord. And he compromised his communion with the Lord on the altar of busyness. Long before he broke the commandments, thou shalt have no other gods before me. Thou shalt not commit adultery. And so I ask myself, and I'm going to ask you, what are you drawing your satisfaction from? What are you drinking from? Busyness and things will zap more and more of our time away from Christ. And we will begin to weaken spiritually and morally. So that suddenly we get sucked into looking at things that we should never look at. Our minds begin to get plagued with these horrible thoughts. We begin being entertained by things. And we do things that are nothing short of wickedness. Why? Because there's no resistance. Why is there no resistance? Because the resistance and the fortress comes with communion and fellowship with Jesus. And so it was for King Solomon. His resistance to sin had been broken down because he had lost his connection to God in worship. And instead he pursued many other things. More things than you and I will ever pursue and be involved in. George Mueller said this, and I quote from him. He said, "Let none expect to gain mastery over his inward corruption in any degree without going in his weakness again and again to the Lord for strength. Nor will prayer with others or conversing with the brethren make up for secret prayer and communion." Now, I've said this, and I mean it, but you know, I say I love to listen to good preaching, and I do. But that must not take away from my time. That does not substitute for my own personal time with the Lord. Even being with other brothers and sisters, even coming to church this morning, even coming to prayer meeting, even praying together. Don't mark that up as a substitute for your communion with Jesus. That's not sufficient. Are you in the good fight of faith? Am I in the good fight of faith? It's vital. What happened to King Solomon? We don't know for sure. There's probably reasons for that. You read through the book of Ecclesiastes, and Solomon's honesty is really striking in that book. And as he evaluates his life and everything that he did, And we even are impressed by all that he did. As he looks at all of that, what does he say it is? It's all vanity and like grabbing at the wind. Just can't never get a hold of anything. It didn't bring him anything. And so this morning, dear brother and dear sister, your number one objective should be to know and to enjoy your God. If you neglect our time with the Lord and a secret prayer and a worship through the Word of God, you may find yourself on the high road to apostasy from the gospel. And so this morning, it's an encouragement for you all. It's a warning for you all. It's a warning for myself. If you have been unfaithful in the battle, get back into the battle again. Get back up again. If you're growing discouraged in the battle, may you have received some encouragement. It's worth the fight. None of us here this morning, I am convinced, none of us want to end up where King Solomon ended up in his life. We don't. But if we're going to be different than King Solomon, the wisest man that ever lived, we better take some lessons from his life and allow them to help us in our own lives. May God bless each of you. May you continue to take time to worship your God, to pray to your God, and may we not allow other things to steal that time away from us, or we will die spiritually. Let's kneel for prayer.